Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Welcome to 2019, the first show of this new year. Friday, January 4th, approximately 10 o'clock here in an undisclosed location, located deep behind the orange curtain. I had great holidays, great New Year's, did a lot of stuff with the kids. I even got dragged to a showing of Mary Poppins. Now, this may surprise some of you because, as you may know, Mary Poppins is it's a musical movie. So the actors periodically will break into song and dance. And I went into the movie, I'll say this, I went into the movie with very low expectations. I'm not a huge Mary Poppins fan of the original movie either. It's just not really my kind of thing. But anyway, went into it with low expectations, surprised how great Emily Blunt was. Right? I assume that was really her voice. I think she did a great job. But one thing, observation, and this is true for so much of what's out there in the media right now. So, I don't want to spoil anything, but I don't think this is a spoiler on the movie itself. It's a continuation. It's not a remake. So this movie is dealing with the next generation. The kids, the little kids in the first movie have grown up and are now adults. And Mary Poppins comes back to help with their... Anyway, but you get the picture. And so we're talking, we're talking about, 1900, 1910 in London. And this movie, I would say, there were so many black actors in this movie playing all sorts of roles, right, that you just would not have been typical for the era that the movie was placed in. And I know it's a fanciful movie, and I know it's historically inaccurate. And as I'm watching, I'm thinking, well, why? Why are they doing this? And it's deliberate, right? It's a deliberate overrepresentation of minorities in a non-historically accurate setting. I thought, well, what if I just picturing this, right? Because I've seen a number of great movies about the Civil War era, pre-Civil War era, when we had the disgusting practice of slavery in this country, and I'm wondering what would happen if somebody in Hollywood were to cast a white actor as a slave, for example. See, it's turning it around, right? I mean, if traditionally, let's say, lawyers in Great Britain at the turn of the century were not black or persons of color, by the same token, right? The reverse, if we were trying to picture in some sort of a movie depicting the slave man, the world would erupt into a ball of fire. I mean, the media would absolutely have a fit. Now, why is this? Because I think a great argument can be made. This is just an observation. A great argument can be made. If we're beyond color, it really doesn't matter who plays a role. It doesn't really matter who plays a part. It's a good actor. It's a good actor. I think believability has to be a big part of a movie and how things are represented. But, can you have Sean Connery play Rosa Parks, in a biopic? Probably not. It's not going to sell, right? It's not going to feel authentic. People are going to, they might like it. I don't know. Sean Connery could probably do a good job playing anything. But anyway, this is the thing. And what it comes down to, the takeaway here that I realized in all of this is you cannot claim someone else's benefit of their victimhood status. That's what this is, right? You can have affirmative action, right? You can have affirmative lights, camera action, but you can't put someone who has, let's say, white privilege into a role that is depicting someone who is a victim on the Democrats, totem of victimhood hierarchy. Can't do that because that's appropriation of someone's status in society as a victim. And this part, this is the part of it that just, you know, Hollywood's very liberal. We know this, but this just bothers me fundamentally to my core. It disgusts me because at the end of the day, it's really back to exploiting people based on the color of their skin to make some argument, a societal argument that doesn't do anything to advance us beyond the next level of a colorblind society, right? So you get feel-good people who are seeing the movie and saying, oh, this is great. You know, we're representing minorities. This is great. Everybody's, you know, kumbaya. But behind it, actually, is this really, really, it's a sinister agenda. And it actually is directly in contradiction to what the stated goals of this type of stuff is. You know, by the way, I've heard from the inside, from somebody who works at Pixar, the company, you know, does all the great anime. They will do, they're owned by Disney now. So this is Disney. They will sit as they go through, they cut through the various scenes of I don't, it doesn't matter, whatever the movie is, right? And they will actually say, no, we got to erase that white guy over there and put somebody Hispanic, black. I mean, they're that detailed in the editing process, are adding people of color. I mean, as if it matters. All in a society purportedly moving toward a place where none of this matters. I think that this, and don't worry, I'm going to get to all the Pelosi stuff and the Romney stuff and all of that that's going on. I will get to it. But it's just this weekend had me thinking after I saw that movie. Right as it was happening, there was a story, maybe you missed it, about the trans actor that was insisting that the next James Bond ought to be a trans woman. Do you remember this? I have it here. Hold on. Yeah, here it is. Okay, so yeah, Dominic West said that it was high time for a transgender actor to be chosen to star as the next 007. And apparently a bunch of people globbed onto this. And I may surprise you with my take on this. Because, look, if there's somebody out there that thinks they're a woman, looks like a woman. We're talking here about a man. So thinks like a man, looks like a man, is masculine. It's really about the role that James Bond is, right? Who is James Bond? He's a masculine man. He's a tough guy. He's a guy that all guys want to be. You know, I'm not all guys, but, you know, a lot of guys want to be like James Bond and the martini and the Rolex and the fast Aston Martin. You get the drift. Gets all the ladies. You know, I don't really necessarily care or even want to know if that person was once a woman who's playing that role. But if they look like a man and talk like, if it's authentic in the movie and it works, I think that there's, I don't know, I don't have necessarily a problem with it. I'm maybe shocking some of you. I don't have a problem with it. I don't. But what I don't want, what you have right now is obviously this movement that is, very critical of the toxic masculinity out there, right? You know, we want a world full of beta males, which of course has women in liberal centers across America actually running for cover because they're realizing no men want to ask them out and there's problems. Da, 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 da. You get that separate conversation. But in that world of where we're perhaps wanting to make a James Bond-like character less aggressive, less masculine, less all that, you start to change the role, and it totally messes with the entire concept. And I'm going to tell you, as a business guy looking at it, that's not going to work because people are going to see a James Bond movie not for the gadgets, not for the cool scenes, although all of that is nice and the exotic filming locations, but they are going to see that Bond movie because so many men identify or want to identify with a character like Bond, and so many women out there think he's handsome. So my only thing, the only person that's playing that role, it doesn't matter who they were, how they were born or whatever, what it matters is who they are now, how they're portrayed, and if they're doing justice to the role. All right, I had to get all of that out. Now, speaking of roles, changes, where we were and where we are now, Nancy Pelosi is back! Yay, Nancy! Thank you. Warm Sam Nation thank yous. Heartfelt, I want to say this really, folks, heartfelt Sam Nation thank yous to the, let's see here, how many? There were 14 House Democrats that said no, that did not vote for Nancy, voted for a smattering of other candidates. But you figure the math is there's, I think there's 199 Republicans now in the House, 235 Democrats. So you have, you basically have, you she had more than enough votes. What does this mean practically for us? Well, I've thought about this a great deal. And what it means is that we are going to have one hell of a 2 years on this program talking about it. Well, no, we are. We are because Nancy is going to. I look to the 14 Democrats that said no. They get it. Right. They understand what. And honestly, I bet there are other Democrats that don't want her either. Don't be fooled thinking that the rest that every Democratic vote that went for Nancy thinks that Pelosi is a great option for Speaker. The reason she got elected is twofold. One, Pelosi and has done what past speakers of the House have done, including Paul Ryan, is they have slowly over time passed rules within their own caucus. So a caucus being Republicans versus Democrats. Like, so within the Democratic Party caucus and also within the House, leadership has passed rules that makes the leading member of that party more and more powerful. And power in Washington is measured by what goodies you can give to people. That's it. It's not the force, you know, it's not charm, certainly not good looks. It's what can I do for you? Because if I can bribe you with a goodie, aka if I am the leader of a caucus, if I am the Speaker of the House, certain powers come with these positions, right? Those powers were given to that position over time, passed through various rules, and agreed upon incrementally. But those powers include things like handing committee chairs, subcommittee chairs, handing offices to different people, handing funds, right? Appropriating funds. So, you know, if I'm a congressman, a freshman congressman, I'm going, I don't like Nancy Pelosi, but I'm in a kind of like, you know, let's say 50-50 or, you know, 51-49% Republican-Democrat district. One of the things I need to bring home is the bacon. I got to bring home money. I got to show my constituents that see that bridge over there? I got that built these last 2 years. Well, you're not going to get diddly squat as a freshman congressman or a, you know, a second or third term congressman, junior person right on the totem pole hierarchy if you vote against the speaker, if you vote against the party leader, right? Because before yesterday, she got elected speaker, but she's been the House minority leader for a number of years. And before that, she was speaker. So she's got all the control over her caucus. Now, the other part of this is that there really wasn't there was no candidate, right, that was strong enough. Of the 14 Democrats, I don't think they really coalesced behind any one candidate. No, there's a number of like of one vote people. Right. So, you know, and I'll tell you, to me, that's actually very revealing. It's revealing, one, that the effectiveness by which Nancy Pelosi was able within her caucus to squash opposition. OK, but the other part of it is that these votes against Pelosi were really nothing. I would say almost by agreement that there were a number of congressmen, many of them freshmen, who ran on promises of not voting for Pelosi. And they had to keep their promise. So they didn't vote for Pelosi, but they voted for their buddy. And it was like, it almost to me smells, and I have a very good sense of smell, folks. It's why you listen to the program. It smells to me like, you know, we perhaps spoke to the office of Nancy Pelosi and said, yeah, Nan, look, I can't vote for you, but I'm just going to vote for Susie over here. You know, it's not, you know, no hard feelings. I just got to do this. And they almost kind of agreed to vote for different people to not legitimize any one person as an opponent of the Speaker of the House. And that's, I think, what really went down. So now you understand a little better. I'm more on this where I'm going to get Romney. If you didn't catch this week, Romney stepped in some doo-doo. I'm going to talk to you about that when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is a solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Spirited discussion here on the break about my thoughts on the bond deal. So producer Robbie's a little slack jawed. My take on the trans actor representing or playing James Bond. I believe in having a wholly consistent position on a topic. And my consistency on this. Look, when I watch TV, which I love to do, and when I watch movies, which I love to do, and when I watch James Bond movies, which everyone that knows me, right? That's I freaking love James Bond. So I want it to be believable. Now, that's what bothers me about Mary Poppins. It's just not believable that they're depicted. I don't exactly remember this. So don't quote me, but I believe I saw in one of the loved up scenes an interracial couple. Well, I'm sorry. I don't think that was typical in London in 1910. I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm just saying that wasn't typical. So it makes the movie less believable. Now, if you've got a black actor and, I didn't want to get too deep into Tropic Thunder references, but if you've got a person of one race playing somebody of a different race and they're costumed to look like that person, you obviously can't do, certainly can't costume going one way, right? You can probably do it the other, but you can't go the other way. But anyway, it doesn't matter to me who the person is. It matters to me how they're depicting the role. And it certainly doesn't matter to me if there's a trans actor who was a woman is now a masculine man. And I mean, how can they play a worse Bond than Timothy Dalton? I don't know. I'm going to get hate mail on that one. Anyway, so those are just my thoughts. Enough. To some it's sacrilegious, but I'm telling you, I have a wholly consistent position on this and I will defend it. All right. Nancy Pelosi was defending her position. Now, let me tell you, the shutdown is continuing. Now the Democrats are in, and they're voting. They've got a new budget out that doesn't include funding for the wall, and they're sending it to the Senate. It is 100% nothing, right? You've heard it, in the news today, yesterday, that the House, the new Democratic House, because yesterday all the new members were sworn in, so now the House is officially in the hands of a lunatic Democratic majority. They now are advancing a vote, and I think that's already been done, or it's very close to being done, a vote to have a new budget passed, but it doesn't include the funding on the wall. Now, Trump said very clearly, I am not signing anything that doesn't have my $5 billion for the wall. And in turn, Mitch McConnell is not even going to bring it up for a vote. He's getting the usual wobbly Republicans are breathing down Mitchie's neck there there's no point. What's McConnell going to do? Bring a vote in the Senate on a bill that the president already has made clear he will veto? And certainly in the Senate, as we talked last week, there are enough votes. There are not enough votes to override the presidential veto because the Senate majority of Republican majority has strengthened. Here is Nancy Pelosi in her own words talking about her first acts upon being sworn in as Speaker, and she goes straight to the wall. Listen.
Give us a month for us to negotiate what this package could be to protect our borders, because border security is a priority that we all have. It's a responsibility that we have. We take an oath to protect and defend. So you can't say if you're not for the wall, you're not for border security. That is a very false statement. Open up government. Let's have an adult conversation about how we protect our borders. And let's listen to people who know what they're talking about.
Let's have an adult conversation about how we protect our borders. Sounds to me like no wall. This is a very dangerous game of chicken. Now, in a minute, I'm going to address her other statement here about listening to experts, because that's nonsense. But it's an absolutely at first blush an intractable position. Trump says, "I am vetoing anything that doesn't have the wall in it." Pelosi's saying, "No way are you getting a wall." And in the middle, the tiebreaker, folks, the way it's set up is really you've got to override the veto in the Senate. And unless you have enough senators that agree by common consent that they are okay carrying on their backs, right? Because this would be Republicans, right? Carrying on their backs the forever label as the people that stabbed Trump and betrayed Trump and betrayed border security and said no to the wall. Unless you can get enough Republicans that want to literally commit seppuku right there, political ritual suicide, this is going to continue until Trump or the House Democrats blink. That's who this is between. And I'm going to talk more on this when we come back. I'll get to the Romney thing, too. Don't go anywhere. Back right after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Majowski. You'll find him very interesting. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Nation, rarely wrong, always right here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. So we have a game of sumo wrestling, game of chicken, whatever you want to call it, on the mat. Nancy Pelosi staring down with her steely, beady eyes, the Trumpster, over the border wall. Now, just to refresh a little bit here, it's required to get the presidential veto overridden, right? So Trump, all he has to do is say no. Veto the bill, send it back. No, unless it has the wall. No, unless it has the wall. Now, what happens is that, if Trump keeps saying no, two-thirds of the House and Senate have to vote to override it. And so one thing that, I need to say, too, about this, I'm focusing on the Senate. I think it's going to be tough to get the votes, two-thirds votes in the Senate. It's a lot of people, 66 senators. But I have to focus, too, the 199 Republicans in the House, still a significant number. And you got to remember, some of the wobbly ones, those were voted out of office. But in the super conservative districts, you got a lot of Freedom Caucus people. You got a lot of people very pro-border. And those districts, the Republicans won. So you're going to have to get some wobbly House Republicans, and by the way, typically House conservatives are much more conservative than the Senate conservatives, or certainly the Republicans, House Republicans and versus the Senate Republicans. So all things to keep in mind. This fight is Trump's to lose, right? He is in the position of strength. Don't listen to anything else anybody else is telling you. Trump is in a position of strength, but all he has to do is keep his nerves, you know, solid and not care what the media is going to say about him. Because, of course, all these government shutdown nonsense and all the people out of work and poor government employees, you know, it's all on Trump and Trump's a meanie and the Grinch that stole Christmas and the like. All right. Now, the wall, it remains important. And what every single Democrat is saying are Nancy Pelosi's talking points. And they are that the experts all agree that the wall is not necessary. It's stupid. It's spendy. It's this, it's that, and the other. And what we really need are drones and cameras and, you know, and invisible fences, you know, the kind that you use, you know, for your dog when you're training them to stay on your lawn and whatnot. So almost as soon as Nancy Pelosi was done driveling about how we don't, you know, we need to listen to the experts and Trump doesn't know what he's doing. It was a press conference. The president of National Border Council, Brandon Judd, and Border Patrol agents behind him said this. This is Brandon Judd speaking, and he's, again, the president of the National Border Council.
My name is Brandon Judd. I'm the president of the National Border Patrol Council. I've been a Border Patrol agent for 21 years. I can personally tell you from the work that I have done on the southwest border that physical barriers, that walls actually work. You hear a lot of talk that there are experts that say that walls don't work. I promise you that if you interview Border Patrol agents, they will tell you that walls work. I worked in Naco, Arizona for 10 years. We didn't have physical barriers in Naco, and illegal immigration and drug smuggling was absolutely out of control. We built those walls, those physical barriers, and illegal immigration dropped exponentially. Anywhere that you look where we have built walls, they have worked. They have been an absolute necessity for Border Patrol agents in securing the border.
Bingo! And you know what? You know what I like to do in life is I generally like to listen to what an expert says and just kind of ping it or measure it, I guess, test it against my own personal life experience. I keep telling you this issue is not abstract. You and I, as homeowners, as people that have families who want to be secure in their apartments, in their communities, we understand this. We understand that everywhere we go, whether we go to work, we go to our office and we have to get through a gate. Or we go, you know, we go visit some friends who live in a gated community. Or we go into our apartment building and there's a lock on the front door. We get it that there are physical barriers to prevent entry from unwanted people that intend or plan to do us harm. We get that. So our own life logic, life experience tells us that what this Border Patrol agent of 21 years is saying is true. Okay, over here you've got wide open plains and people just walking across the border. Okay, that's where they're going to do it. And over where they've built walls and barriers, that's where they're not going to do it. And the idea is you complete the entire fence. And all of a sudden, the process of getting, of smuggling people in and smuggling drugs in, contraband, the like, becomes exponentially harder. And yes, that is exactly what I want for my government. In fact, when you look at the Constitution and you look at what oath our office holders, all of them, swear to fulfill, protecting this country in this fashion is one of them. So Trump cannot, absolutely must not give up the fight. The arguments that he will face from the media are brutal. I give you a taste of that when we come back, and I will get to the other stuff as well. Hang with me here, folks. There's a lot going on. It's just 4 days into this year. It's already explosive. Sam Rogowski back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network, fighting dilatory obfuscation day in and day out. Lots of it out there. Case in point, Mark Thompson, a radio host on SiriusXM, probably not a big Trump fan, had this to say, talking with Chris Jansen from MSNBC, had this to say about the government shutdown. Remember, this is and this is all Trump's fault, right? It's not the Democrats' fault for not giving Trump a measly $5 billion. Measly, I say, in relation to the rest of the bill. It's not the Democrats' fault. It's Trump's fault. And listen to this exchange.
Instead of 12 days of Christmas, we've had 12 days of a government shutdown. He's basically care less if the government is open. But think about this in terms of this wall. You know, we just celebrated the birth of Jesus, who was part of an immigrant family seeking political asylum in another country from King Herod's
violence. We've heard a lot from evangelicals on this.
But we should, because if Jesus were today or Trump was back then, he would have been separated from his parents. Joseph and Mary would have been put in a separate detention center. He would have been put in a separate detention center. And he might likely have died in custody like another child did over the holidays.
Yeah, on the 12th day of Christmas, my Trump love gave to me one dead baby Jesus. I mean, I'll tell you why evangelicals are quiet on this. They're with Trump. And you're busy calling them, you know, Jesus killers. This whole thing with the dead babies, too, the dead kids. All right. It's an example. This is classic Trump, an example of sometimes it misfires, but he's fundamentally right. So, you know, Trump defended, there's two kids, I believe it was there were two children who tragically died while in custody after illegally crossing the border. Now, the facts are the facts. You know, the kids were sick. The parents traveled with sick children. The parents brought kids, traveled with them hundreds of miles on foot, you know, on the back of a truck, open air, exposed. It's wintertime. It's cold. So the facts are what they are. Let's not even get to the point that at some point, you know, most people in this country that are, you know, now second, third generation immigrants, right? Their parents came through Ellis Island. If you had TB or you had any signs of disease, they sent you back. They sent you back, or they locked you in a cell until you got better. So, okay, but you know, putting all that aside, these kids die in custody. And the media, of course, makes a big deal. And Trump basically says something to the effect of, you know, and he does a tweet, and I don't have it here in front of me, but again, this is a problem with being limited to a fixed number of characters and the fact that Trump sometimes can't help himself. So he in the tweet, he's trying to explain that these kids were already sick when they got here. And it's just it comes off as callous. It comes off as crass. And it's not helpful at all to the argument. There are certain topics you just have to leave alone. The thing to understand about Trump, everybody's busy calling him unprincipled, right? That's the Romney attack, which we're going to get to. I think it's going to be next hour because we're just so much to talk about. But the idea that Trump is not immoral, he's amoral, according to the former Senate Majority Leader. So the truth is Trump's actually fundamentally principled on things he holds fast to them in spite of getting a tremendous amount of backlash. Now, and this is an example of it. So, yes, you can be right in life, but you can definitely say your point or make your point in the wrong way. And I am no stranger to that, certainly myself in my personal life. So there it is. So this is right now is that Trump is being portrayed like you just heard. He's being portrayed as the guy who literally would have killed baby Jesus 2000 years ago because he would have put baby Jesus instead of a manger. He would have put him in a detention center and left him there on a cold concrete floor. I don't know. If Trump backs down, he's finished. Because the only way to prevail here is to hold firm And I suspect, knowing what I know about Trump, a lot of people have been coming to me about my prediction is of how this is going to play out. And I've so far not wanted to wade into that. I'm going to do that here right after the break. Let me tell you my thoughts as of today. What I think may happen here. How's that for a qualified conditional response? Sam Rogowski, don't go anywhere. Back right after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up. On the wrong side of right.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Baby Jesus Killer Trump, a.k.a. President of the United States, a.k.a. the Trumpster. Not getting a lot of love for shutting down the government. So, I tell you one thing I'm absolutely certain of. If he gives in, he's done politically, right? And I think this is not a crystal ball thing. This is a logic thing. And I think everybody knows it. You know who knows it the most are the Democrats. Because for them, make no mistake, this wall is not about what? About actually a wall on the border. And you know why? Even CBS News gets it. Listen to what this report by Tony Ducopil on Thursday, talking about the Border Patrol argument. It's actually a fair report, and you'll be surprised who even CBS acknowledges was once behind and supportive of a border protection bill.
At more than 10 feet tall and made of steel, barriers like these might seem like a prototype of President Trump's border wall. In fact, they're a sampling of what's already in place along the U.S.-Mexico border. All part of the Secure Fence Act, a 2006 political compromise on immigration. Signed by President Bush and supported by 90 Democratic members of Congress, it included funding for two layers of reinforced fencing, plus additional physical barriers along roughly 700 miles of border from California to Texas. Among the senators who backed it, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and current Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
Oh, wee-wee. How about that? Chuck Schumer, you know, the other guy that stands next to Nancy Mistress Pelosi and blathers on about how a wall is not the right thing and how wall is racist and how the wall is not what the experts agree on happening. And he voted for a wall back in 2006. What this is about is the Democrats seeking to bury Trump in 2020. So you see what I'm saying? If Trump gives in, he's giving into a setup. So what do I think is going to happen? I think the more that you attack Trump, the less he wants to give you. Trump is not the kind of guy that gets attacked into changing his position. It's a good quality when he's right. It's a bad quality when he's wrong. He's right here. So right now, it's a good quality. Do you follow? Now, the other part of this is, you got to kind of read what's happening behind the scenes, which is what I am here for and why you listen to this program. So I'm going to tell you Mick Mulvaney, who was the head of the OMB. You've never heard of it. It's an obscure department. Anyway, he was the head of the OMB, has now moved in as the acting chief of staff. Unlike any previous chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney, for all his past differences with the president during the campaign, he was a vocal opponent of some of Trump's various pronouncements. Mick Mulvaney on the shutdown and on the wall is absolutely speaking with, I would say almost from the Trump White House, with the exception of Sarah Huckabee Sanders, an unprecedented unified voice. So I'm less interested really in what Trump is saying on Twitter I'm interested in two things. What are his people doing and saying? Are any of them showing signs of fissure or cracking? And when I got Mick Mulvaney, who in theory is this moderate guy, but he's talking about how, I mean, just today, I'll give you an example. He went again, he did this quick press conference. He's making some comments to some reporters. He says, I've strongly encouraged the president not to back down on this. We are holding firm. And what that tells me is either that's really his opinion, or he's really sticking to his boss publicly, or they're backing him up. But certainly there's no rogue faction within the Trump West Wing looking to undermine, you know, crazy Uncle Don. Right. They know that politically this is a do or die fight. And the other thing, right, the other thing is Trump just doesn't like to be bullied into changing his position. And he doesn't like to lose publicly. So you combine these two things, and that's what I'm looking at when I'm analyzing this. So you want my prediction? Okay, I don't just tease and then, you know, then I deliver, right? So here it is. I think Trump's going to prevail. You know, it could change, but based on what I see right now, I don't think he's giving in. All right, we come back. Romney, former candidate, Republican nominee for president, screwed the pooch, lost the race. Well, wait, he didn't screw the pooch. He hosed the pooch. He kept the pooch on the dog carrier, on the car, during a family road trip, hosed the dog off when he got hot. Did not screw the pooch. But he did lose the race and now sees himself as a bit of a... what would we call him? Conscience. There you go. Thank you. Yeah, he's the conscience of the Republican Party. And I'll bracket that Republican Party establishment. I'll get into all of this, my thoughts on this subject, and some facts, too. Sam Rogowski back right after this.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Yo! Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network, the second hour of Radio Madness, custom tailored to give you the latest and greatest political insights. I am your host, serving you on a weekly basis from my heart and from my brain. And here we go. One of the big news stories this week is the op-ed piece that Mitt Romney wrote attacking Donaldus Maximus. This op-ed piece was published in the Washington Post. Now, let's... It doesn't matter. I called him an immoral guy. He hasn't risen to the... Or, you know, filled the big shoes... Yeah, it's a mixed metaphor. That's why I didn't want it. It's risen to the mantle. Whatever. The idea is that Trump basically hasn't become presidential yet. And I have so many thoughts and so many feelings about this. So let me just take a little bit of time to talk to you about this. So I actually learned about the story from my wife, who was, I would say, moderately to severely irritated when she read the piece. And I'll give you the wife take. Can I do that? I'm doing this all backwards, but I'm going to give you the wife take because what that is. You know, Sherry's, I don't want to call her, you know, the woman on the street because that's a problem. But, you know, Sherry's my canary in the mine for what regular, common sense Republican women are thinking out there. She's not a radical. She's not a Trump lover. And I would also add to this that I don't want to get in all the details, but, you know, she's a fan of the Romneys and we know the family and all this stuff. So I'm coming from this from a position where I got to tread a little bit lightly. But even her hot take on this was, well, this just cements his whole position as a flip-flopper. Remember that? Flip-flopper, Mitt Romney, the flip-flopper during the campaign? You know, he got ruined. He got devastated by Obama because he changed his positions. Now, what's the flip-flop here? The flip-flop that my wife is referring to, many of you will recognize immediately, is Romney's warm embrace of Trump when Romney himself was the candidate, or soon to be the candidate, the was running in the primaries and then subsequently became officially the Republican nominee, running against Obama. And you remember Trump at the time had made some noise about running himself in the primary and had opted against it, I think wisely. But at any rate, had opted against it. And in turn, the media that the buzz that he generated with his anticipated run, even back then, gave him a certain amount of kingmaking powers. Okay, if you're running for office, I don't care if you're running for in your neighborhood for, you know, to be on the association board. You don't just run. You've got to go talk to a few influential people and get their support because those influential people are going to talk to their people and yada, yada, yada. In presidential runs, it's very much like this. You've got to pick up some backers. And one of the backers that Romney picked up was Trump. He went to see Trump. I don't know if it was at Trump Tower or at one of his estates. And they had a really warm press conference and Trump gave his support, his endorsement of Romney. It was all extremely gracious. Now, during the election, Romney, I don't know. I'd forget. There were some. He had not a lot of love for Trump. He didn't give Trump a lot of love during the election. And even after that, do you remember that Trump was being considered for a cabinet position? Romney. You remember that Romney was being considered by Trump to fill a position in the White House? There was talk of Romney perhaps being Secretary of State or possibly even being Chief of Staff. And Romney made numerous visits to Trump over, I think, in New Jersey at his Bedford Country Club and met with the president, met with the transition team, had a series of nice conversations, made some nice comments about Trump. And now he won his race in Utah. Winning as Mitt Romney in Utah is sort of like, I don't know. It's like being the highest level athlete and competing in the Special Olympics. OK, I mean, Mitt Romney in Utah is there's God. There's the president of the Mormon Church. Jesus is in there somewhere. And then it's Mitt Romney. OK. I'm just telling you this. My wife is from Utah. I can say that, I think. So in those five or so important celestial beings, Romney's right up there. And you know why? Do you know the history of this? It's because of the Olympics. The Olympics in Utah were going terribly. The guy that was running them was running them into the ground. Money was missing. It was a big cluster mess. And Romney came in and, to his credit, you know, saved all of their A-money monies, okay, and put together an incredible Olympic experience and saved Utah from getting a black eye. So the people of Utah love Mitt Romney. Now, the people in Utah, yes, a lot of them are Mormon. Yes, a lot of them are very conservative culturally, sexually, okay? You know, they look at a guy like Trump, you know, Stormy Daniels and all these bimbos, that is not who the people of Utah are. But they are freedom-loving, gun-loving, Constitution-loving, you know, red-blooded Americans. They are people who fly their American flags. They see a guy like Trump up on stage hugging, literally hugging the American flag. And a lot of what Trump says, what he says, and the things that he does politically are extremely popular in Utah. The other Republican senator in Utah, Mike Lee, has warmly embraced Trump, and Mike Lee is extremely popular in Utah. So I'm letting you know that Mitt Romney here gets elected in Utah, easy feat. He thinks he's safe. He's won the election. He's safe. And what is the first thing that Mitt Romney does? The guy's brain dead. What's the first thing that he does? Oh, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to literally open my fly and piss on the president of the United States by writing an op-ed piece in the enemy newspaper, right? The Washington Post. Literally the enemy's newspaper. The number one critical voice of Donald Trump in print media. Why? Of what benefit is this to Romney? And I will tell you what it is. There's no political benefit to it. He's a freshman senator. He's coming in. He needs all the allies he can get. Well, who is he kidding? You want to pick a fight with he doesn't have to show his independence the way some of these new Congress men have to do by distancing themselves from Pelosi. He doesn't need any of that. He will be the senator in Utah until he drops dead. I mean, he's going to get elected and reelected. It doesn't matter. So what's this about? And I'm telling you, folks, I know the answer here. And it is a sad thing for me to watch because it reveals a terrible, terrible character flaw that Romney has. So he's here picking this fight ostensibly because he needs to take a stand and he needs to be the voice of reason in the Republican Party and da 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 da. But really, to Romney, he is absolutely, he sees spots, red blotchy spots that are appearing every time in his eyes, in his cornea, every time he thinks of Trump. Because a guy like Romney, who has, is always worried about making the wrong move, always looking at his shadow, always looking, everything, every line crossed, T crossed, I dotted, now I'm getting as bad at metaphors as Romney. He looks at a guy like Trump and he has disdain for him. He sees a guy like Trump and Trump is the guy that wings it, but he does it successfully. He wings it and he builds things. He wings it and he wins races. This is the way the guy, is thinking about this. You know, when we were in college or high school and there was always that one guy that maybe the kid always got great grades. But, you and I, if we wanted an A, we had to work hours and hours and hours on it. Romney's the guy that works hours and hours and hours and hours to get an A. Trump works too. Don't get me wrong. Trump makes it all look easy, but the appearance of Trump is that it's all extremely spontaneous. It came easily. It just kind of dropped down and happened. I know there is scuttlebutt within the Romney camp, not the Romneys, but the Romney camp, the supporters of Romney. Well, Donald Trump didn't earn any of it. His rich daddy gave him all the money. And I literally, every time, I just put my arms up in the air to these people, and I know many of them, and I say, how is that a measure of anyone's lack of success? Romney's in the same boat. His dad was a multi-millionaire. Romney got a leg up in life. And that does not discount, in my view, anything that Romney has gone on to do himself. So I think it's jealousy. It's one thing. The other thing is I think Romney's just so politically inept. And the greatest irony of this is to me, right? The ironic thing is that the guy that is accusing Trump of being immoral, of lacking character, is actually the guy who has changed his position so many times in each and every election just to conform to the political opinions of the audience he's playing to. where he's willing to wholly change his political, the essence of his, the core of his political beliefs, depending on who his prospective voters are. I look at this, and as a politician, okay, in political world, I get it. Romney's a faithful husband, and Trump isn't, okay? Right? I mean, you know, I think Trump's a good dad. I think Romney's a good dad, right? You know, we could do a little pro-cons list, Venn diagram it. I don't care. But the long story short here is, on a political level, as politicians, Trump has so much more character than Romney. 10 times the character. He's got more character in his little finger than Romney does in his whole body. I reserve to change my opinion a little bit if he caves on the wall. You know, if Trump gives in to Pelosi. You think Romney would hold fast on this? Romney would run as a Republican, would promise all of us that he was going to cut taxes and cut the government and cut waste and build a wall and stop illegal immigration. He would promise us the moon. And the minute he got in there and Nancy Pelosi was going, oh, you know, or, you know, Mark Thompson, whoever the hell that is, talking about Romney killing baby Jesus, Romney would literally wet his pants and run and hide. In a political sense. Maybe he actually would run and hide. In the literal sense, too. This is so outrageous. It has my panties in a twist. I don't know about you. So now we're going to go to the break now because I want to get to these. I want to give full justice to some of these reactions. I love what Gingrich had to say. And I'll explain that when I come back because I have been on the receiving end of a Gingrich criticism myself once. And you know, Gingrich can be an a-hole. God love him. Sam Rejofsky back right after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Majowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Yeah, I remember I was a senior in high school. I went to Washington, D.C. I was in the House of Representatives and it's unannounced, unplanned. But then Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, came out to speak to us children about the political happenings of the day. You know, that was when Newt was at the top of his game. And he was a hero of mine, you know, and I went up to ask a question at the microphone. Oh, hello, you know. Sam Rejofsky from Irvine, California. And I want to ask a question. I don't remember what the question was, but according to Newt, it was a dumb question. And he did not hesitate to let me know. And I, guy, yeah, I think I, no, I did. I just, my, you know, I just got, I just, you know, puckered up and took a lashing and then went and sat down on my chair. And it was, I don't have a fond memory of my one and only Newt Gingrich interaction, but anyway, there it is. So I'm pleased to report that Newt is still in grand form. I don't know if you can listen very closely. If you can catch the zinger here as Gingrich is talking to Steve Doocy on Fox and Friends about Mitt Romney.
What say you about what's going on between these top Republicans?
Well, I mean, first of all, Mitt Romney's a freshman senator, so I'm not sure he's only a top Republican because he was once the nominee and lost. From Romney's own standpoint, I don't understand strategically why you would try to carve out being the anti-Trump before you're even sworn in as a freshman. And I think it's important for Romney, and he'll learn this in the Senate. The Senate doesn't care who you used to be. The senators aren't going to go, oh, yeah, we owe you a lot of extra room because you were once the Republican nominee. But he's a freshman senator. He needs to learn how the Senate works. And ideally, because he's a very smart guy, he's going to focus on actually solving problems, not just getting involved in a game with Trump, because he'll just plain lose. I mean, you can't take Trump on inside his own party.
Bingo. Eddie, you caught it? Of course you had to catch it because, I mean, well, he's only a top Republican because he was once the nominee and lost. The whole premise, I love when you never accept, if somebody gives you a bad question, don't accept the premise of the question. Trump's very good at this. Newt is very good at this. All savvy politicians and people in business are very good at this. What you do is you attack the premise of the question. So even though it's a friendly discussion, Steve Ducey and Newt Gingrich are pals. Gingrich is immediately telling him, well, wait, what do you mean top Republican? How is he a top Republican? Nobody, we're over it. I mean, yeah, he was the nominee and he lost. And now he's Mr. Junior Junior in the Senate, which is a chamber filled with a bunch of guys and gals who have been there in some cases since the Triassic era. And so who is this young upstart Mitt with the perfect hair and the just right amount of gray by his temples? Who does he think he is to be taking on our party and knocking down our president? Great point. I challenge only one thing here that my former nemesis, Newt Gingrich, said, and that is that the allegation that Romney's a smart guy. I don't see any of these moves. I do not see smarts. Now, solving problems, great. I mean, I think Romney would be great in the back room working out how, you know, a certain program is going to work, okay? And I guarantee you Romney's going to have a very well-run Senate office. Like, that office is going to be very well-managed. He's going to have one of these MBA types managing, being his chief of staff, and everything's going to run like clockwork, and a meeting at 8 is going to start at 7:59 on the nose. You know, I mean, it's going to be that kind of office. But as far as being smart and politically smart, this is a black eye for Romney and not for Trump. Let me be clear about that. Now, the you're probably wondering too, what are other Republican senators saying? They're staying away from it, right? I mean, and these are colleagues, right? These are colleagues that Romney needs to win over. Can I explain this to you another way? Imagine your starting school. You're starting a new school. You're starting a new job. That's a better example. You're starting a new job. You haven't even started. You got the job offer. You accepted the job offer. You haven't started. And you're already criticizing the boss. You're already writing a letter, putting it on your Facebook page about how the CEO is a doofus. It doesn't matter if it's true. It doesn't matter if it's not. It's dumb. Because ultimately, the doofus is your CEO, okay? He's your CEO. And what a lot of Republican senators have learned is, in spite of their differences with Trump, there are lots of areas where they agree with him. And there are areas where the president has been extremely helpful to them, i.e., two nominees, successful confirmations of two excellent Supreme Court justices, right? So this is stupid. So I'll come back. I'll give you Rand Paul, who's a current senator, certainly no friend. I would say automatic, Trump puppy dog has challenged Trump a number of issues. He spoke out about this, too, had some interesting points. I'll share that with you in my thoughts. When we come back, quick break. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Okay. Sorry, I was having a little banana bread here. And the break ended, toot sweet. My apologies. Rand Paul, senator, Republican senator, speaking to Neil Cavuto on Wednesday on Fox News. Paul said this when he was asked about Mitt Romney. Listen to this.
I get along fine with the president, but I do have policy disagreements. I have not been afraid ever to challenge the president. In fact, if you look at the voting records, I am more independent than any other Republican in the Senate. But yet I keep good relations with the president because I respect the office. I respect the president, Donald Trump, and I try to work with him to try to get good things done for the country and for my state. So I don't know how it really helps anybody's cause for people to stand up there like they're holier than thou. And it's like, look at me, how virtuous I am. And I'm going to bring down the presidency by criticizing his character in front of the whole nation. It does nobody any good. And in the end, I think it's going to look petty. And I think there's going to be a backlash to this.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, this just reminds me classically of life, what has life taught me in general, is the guy that's out there yelling, calling somebody a thief, calling somebody a crook, pointing fingers, is usually the thief and the crook. Hey, you, the guy who's out there loudly S-talking people, that guy is usually the bad guy. Almost on cue, Dirty Harry Reid of Nevada, a former longtime senator from Nevada who, as you know, was the Senate majority leader, minority leader for a number of years, and a guy who entered the service of our country in Congress with, in his account, like when he'd get nothing, right? He'd get a bank statement and you'd open it up and it said Bupkis and nothing, literally nothing, zero money. And by being in the Senate and earning an average of, what, $130K a year, became a multi-millionaire. That guy, right? Shady Harry, bad little desert deals, real estate, all that. That guy put out there calling that Trump is immoral. He's not immoral, meaning he's not a guy that understands morality but chooses to disobey the rules. He's amoral. He doesn't even have any morals. I almost fell out of my chair. So this, you guys, back to the big overarching rule here, or thesis, we'll say, but it's becoming more and more apparent that the thesis is proving correct, that you have that Trump, by being so unconventional and by being so absurdly over the top at times, baits people into attacking him, right? Into criticizing him and into getting caught up in this frenzy of self-destructive behavior in their quest to blow up the president. And it's not working. The most incredible thing in all of this, as Trump has kids dying in detention centers, you know, or so goes the narrative, and as the stock market has tanked, and as we have this wall fight that is producing a government shutdown, well, his approval numbers are hanging absolutely dead steady. The people that don't like Trump don't like him. The people that like him like him. And that's it. Plus or minus a couple percentage points. It's nothing. It's margin of error. Nobody's getting convinced by any of this, is my point. But what is happening, the reality, right? The stuff that isn't reported on the news, but that we have to deduce by observation and by a little bit of smarts, is that all of this is causing destruction and wreaking havoc on the people that are out there assailing him. And, you know, I've called this from the beginning, the Trump derangement syndrome, where these get so caught up in their Trump hate and so caught up in their these like Romney here in this holier than thou position. Oh, I'm going to attack the president. And it ends up hurting them. Because right now, Romney it's not like a bunch of Democrats out there are suddenly going to vote Republican because of what Romney said. It's not like Romney gained anything out of this except for some fleeting praise and admiration from the left-wing media establishment. But what he did get is he got this black mark that's going to carry with him for the rest of his life. And at his age and where he's at, this is going to lay in people's craw. And I really do think that Trump has now has another scalp, has claimed another victim in his masterful trolling that he does so well. So there it is. Political obituary for Mitt Romney, at least for the foreseeable future. Sam Rogowski, don't go anywhere.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Oh, if there's anyone that I love and I find inconsistent in their positions, it's the liberal media on the subject of global warming. Now, the last few days, by the way, I'm telling you, my energy consumption at the Casa de Murajovsky is up because it's cold outside. And I, you know, from time to time, actually will sit there and think, baby, it's cold outside. But at any rate, I don't mean to bring up old news. So it's cold outside, and I get up in the morning, and the first thing I do, I got to take the dogs out. And so I take the dogs out, and I'm still in my PJs, and it might as well be outer Siberia out there, because, you know, it's 50 degrees or whatever, 55. And I think what I need today is a little bit of global warming. And then I look up because in Irvine, we've got an airport, Santa Ana, and I look up in the sky and I see a contrail from an airplane. I see a jet, you know, transversing the sky, and I immediately feel warmer. So anyway, interesting piece over the holidays from the Daily Caller. Title of it: The New York Times was silent when the DCNF asked if it would support banning private jets. And that's the Daily Caller News Foundation, right? The company that puts out the Daily Caller. It's an online news source, if you haven't heard of it. And what they're doing is they're saying, okay, so the New York Times is out there talking all the time, right? All the time about global warming. And it's their big bugaboo. And we're all going to be toast, right? According to the New York Times, multiple articles about how 25 years from now, there won't be much of a difference between the surface of the Earth and the deep bowels of hell. Except, you know, one place they have a guy with bifurcated tail and cloven hoof and a pitchfork. Well, I don't know, maybe depending on who's elected president next term, we'll see what happens there. But anyway, but the New York Times, while they're criticizing global warming, put out a giant fundraising effort. It's really a fundraising effort. They set up this very expensive, lavish private jet trip around the world. So you see where the criticism is coming from, right? You've got this newspaper committed to Mother Earth. And what are they doing? They're taking some of their top reporters and some of their wealthy readers who sign up for this. I think it's like $140,000 a person. $140,000 for a trip per person on a private jet around the world. And I guess you're stuck on a jet, on a plane, going on vacation with a bunch of New York Times reporters. Speaking of hell, I mean, that's literal hell, but you could sign up for it. And it's, again, the double standard, to which I say this, I can't believe it's actually being pointed out to in a liberal, that this is being pointed out in the media. Because this is so obvious to me. All of these criticisms, every Democrat that is out there, Al Gore, all these people that talk about the environment, they all have 15,000 square foot homes, have outdoor pools that are heated year round, fly on private jets by themselves, you know, when they're flying somewhere for 3 hours. I mean, they all do this. They live lavishly, and they ought to if they've earned it and are not using monies from, let's say, Russian uranium deals to pay for it. But it's the stunning level of hypocrisy in the global warming world right now is reaching a fever pitch, in my opinion. And you noticed, right, how was it Chuck Todd who on MSNBC declared that he would not give any time to climate change deniers on his program? Because it's settled science. Robbie, what are you laughing at? Stop laughing. It's settled science, bro. It's done. You know, like science, you know, when science decides something and then it's settled and it's never challenged. And then we just know it's a fact. You know, I'm still figuring out what to name the dinosaurs, because those names changed from when I was a kid. And I got a status update somewhere that Pluto isn't a planet anymore. And I can't decide this, you know, five years ago, somebody told me that statins were like a must take. You know, hey, if you're over 45, take statins, like just take them regardless. It's like a miracle drug. And now it's like, oh, my God, well, statins, you know, they might give you Alzheimer's or God knows what. I mean, folks, science, if anybody tells you that science is settled, run for the hills. OK. Science, by definition, teaches you to question everything. And you've got one of, you know, the trusted media reporters out there, intrepid defender of truth, literally telling people who are scientists questioning the validity of accepted science that I don't even want to hear from you. My gosh, I'm telling you, Torquemada has nothing on these people. Nothing. It's crazy. Sam Berjofsky. Sam Nation here on a very warm, global warming, denying program. Over and out, back after the break.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very interesting. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Right. One of the things that I am absolutely happy about in my personal life is that I missed online dating. I just missed it. I totally missed it. When did I get married? 2005. I don't know. I don't know. Was there online dating back then? A little bit. Well, okay, well, I can tell you there was no Tinder. There was no swipe left, swipe right. You know, do you match? Do you not match? Bumble. It was eHarmony. There you go. And that, you know, we all recognize that was for old people. So, well, I mean, you know, it was. I'm joking. I think my sister, I'm not going to get into it. I think my sister met her husband on eHarmony. Oh, okay, Cupid. Yeah, that's the one. Gabby and Chris, I've just outed you. You're welcome. Anyway, so I'm teasing here and all this, but the point is I missed this entire thing. Now, when I have questions on these subjects, I speak to my producer about this because he has friends that are doing this. Not him. He doesn't do this. He's in a relationship, but he has friends that are out there. And so I go to him with these questions and I guess on Tinder, on these, you know, swipey swipe things, when you're on the Tinder, you swipe a certain direction if you like the person. If you're like, it's like, yeah, baby, or nish nish, right? So it's yeah, yeah, nish nish, like, you know, what's his face? And then, Borat, yeah. So anyway, so then what do you have? The other person does the same thing. So if you both say, oh, baby, right, then you match, right? Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay. For those of you who are not familiar with how this works. So this is a great story. What a great way to end today's program. So can you imagine? So the idea is you go on a date and you have sex. And I want to cut to the chase here. That's what Tinder is about. So the guy, this happened in England, of course, North Yorkshire. A guy named Brad was chatting to a woman on Tinder, and she revealed to him that she couldn't meet him for a date that night. Do you know why? Because she was in the hospital having a baby. No, this is real. Okay, so here's the exact text exchange. Brad was a touch surprised. I guess sex wasn't happening that night. What are you doing today? She responds, I'm in the hospital, XX. Oh, wait, no, hold on. What are the XXs for? Those kisses? Oh, they're kiss. Oh, this is gross. Okay. So what are you doing today? I'm in hospital, which is what the Brits say. They don't say they're in the hospital. They said they're in hospital. And the guy, he's concerned. Look at this. Good guy. Brad is a good guy. Oh, no. Why? Kiss. Having my baby. Kiss. And then the woman writes, get this. Gutted, I'm not out tonight, man. Ha ha. Where do these people come from? What is this? Yeah. Yeah. Northern England. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. All right, I don't know. I thought this was hilarious. Who's on a dating app when she's about to pop? I mean, I don't know. Maybe you, we don't know the circumstances. I don't know. What would you do if that happened? This almost, okay, well, this just reminds me of the story. I went out on a date with the woman who told me that, you know, she was going to be married in 6 months. And I looked at her. I was so shocked. I said, well, what are you doing on a date with me? I mean, aren't you with the guy you're going to marry? And she goes, well, I haven't met him yet. And I put my hand up and I said, check, please. Sam Rzhovsky, what a great show. Thank you, guys. It's been great. We're back here next week. And no doubt we'll have plenty to talk about. Have a wonderful weekend and a great next week. See you later.